Anybody else need to be up here before me now? I was single-minded. I don't have my machine set up yet. I got to get it done. Thank you for you can help me out if I mess up here, anybody. And I may need help getting this going, so.
It's not on, so we need the power button.
The blue one?
Yeah.
Do you want to do it, or? I can do it wrong just as easily as. Okay. I'll give some introductory remarks. My wife, John Lee won't say this when he talks about having a good marriage, but I'm convinced that one of the attributes of a good marriage is knowing when to ignore your spouse. And when not to. Sometimes, I love my wife more than any person on earth. She is wonderful. But sometimes she says things that are just, what was the Tom Woody look? You know, the really? Her counsel for me tonight was, Mike, don't make him think we're all a bunch of weirdos in California. That was my comment, yeah. That boat sailed a long time ago. I remember one meeting, a brother commented to me, I had been doing some song leading and I was using a tuning fork for the pitch, but I also was carrying a pitch pipe in my front pocket. And, I don't know, sometime later in the meeting I ended up using the pitch pipe. I don't know why I chose to even have both, but I did. And a brother came up to me afterwards and said, I'm so thankful to see that that's a pitch pipe. And not chewing tobacco. Well, I don't smoke and I don't chew and I don't go with girls that do, so. You can rest assured on that. There will probably be ways that I will offend you, but it won't be about that. In fact, I've already done it. I've already stepped in it earlier today, so. My goal is to prod you, yes. And you will probably be uncomfortable. My goal is not to offend you to the point that it will keep you from doing what I think God wants us to do. So, if I offend you to that point, either correct me if I'm wrong scripturally or religiously, you know, that way, or forgive me if I'm just blundering through. But, here we go. Who are our Samaritans? Are our Samaritans? This lesson will be of little importance to you. If you don't believe that it's important for you to love your neighbor as yourself. If that's not important to you, you know, kind of warm in here. Just you know, doze off. We'll wake you. The song will wake you up at the end. This lesson will be of little importance to you if you don't believe that it's important for you to share the gospel with anyone who is different from you. I am glad for Keith and his message this morning. So I don't have to spend a bunch of time trying to cover that it's important for us to share the gospel. And he says he's going to talk about it's important for us to share the gospel with those who are different, if I understood you correctly, tomorrow. Okay, so I don't really have to talk about that much at all. Yeah, so. but I think that's really part, or in essence, the main issue here. people that are different than me. Let's think of that the other way around. Do we really want another me in the church? Really? Or another you? No. We all have our function. We all are different, and that is our strength. And, you know, the Bible talks about, you know, if you're not one part, shall you be sad that you're not that part? Well, no. Be glad for what you are, the gifts that you have, and use those. And the people that you talk to will be different than you. Maybe very different than you. But they need the gospel too. Some things about the Samaritans. They occupied the land formerly belonging to the tribes of Ephraim and the half-tribe of Manasseh. The capital was the city of Samaria. When the 10 tribes were carried away into captivity, the king of Assyria sent people from Babylon, Cutha, Ava, Hamath, and Sepharvaim to inhabit Samaria, according to 2 Kings chapter 17, verse 24. These foreigners intermarried with the Israelites who had not been carried away into Assyrian captivity, and the Samaritans eventually embraced a religion that was a mixture of Judaism and idolatry, according to 2 Kings 17, verses 26 through 24. The Samaritans were considered half-breeds. They were universally despised by the Jews. Maybe even worse than being a Gentile, being a Samaritan. After the Jews of the two tribes returned from Babylonian captivity, while Nehemiah was engaged in rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem, the Samaritans vigorously attempted to halt the project, according to Nehemiah chapter 6, verses 1 through 6. The Samaritans built a temple on Mount Gerizim, and instead of that location, and insisted that that location had been designated by Moses. The worship there included much idolatry. If you recall, that's a question that the woman at the well, the Samaritan woman at the well, asked of Jesus. Remember that? Our forefathers said we should worship on this mountain, and you Jews say that you should worship in Jerusalem. And basically she says, so what's the deal? Which is right? And Jesus answers, a day will come, and now is, when you will neither worship on this mountain nor in Jerusalem. You will worship in spirit and in truth. God is spirit and wants to be worshipped in spirit and in truth. But salvation is of the Jews. So the Jews had it right, Jesus says. But that wasn't the important part of the answer. The important part of the answer was, that's going to be neither place. Location is no longer the issue. Samaria became a place of refuge for the Jewish criminals. Generally, the Samaritans accepted only the five books of Moses, what we call Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. And they rejected the prophets and the Jewish traditions. Thus, the Jews regarded the Samaritans as terrible people, and they had no dealings with them, according to what we see in John chapter 8, 48, and John chapter 4, verse 9. I'm not going to bother to read those scriptures. Some of those you are familiar with. If you aren't familiar with them, you can look them up and see that hopefully I've made a fairly accurate overview of the situation at that time. Yet it was a Samaritan, not a priest or a Levite, who had compassion toward the man who had been robbed, beaten, and left half dead on the road to Jericho. It was this Samaritan who showed love to his neighbor. Remember, Jesus tells of the good Samaritan. Jesus tells of that when the question was asked, who is my neighbor? And Jesus tells of the Good Samaritan and then asks of those who asked him, who was the neighbor to this man? And the answer was the one who had compassion on him. It was a Samaritan who had compassion on the man who had been beaten. It was a Samaritan who glorified God, fell down at Jesus' feet and gave thanks for being healed of leprosy. 10 lepers were healed, but only one gave thanks. And he was a Samaritan, according to Luke chapter 17, verses 11 through 19. And it was a Samaritan woman that Jesus talked to at Jacob's well at Sychar. Jesus talked with this Samaritan woman about living water, about worshiping in spirit and in truth, and that he is the Messiah. Jesus' discussion with this Samaritan woman is the longest private conversation of Jesus recorded in the Bible. This Samaritan woman convinced others to come out and hear Jesus. He stayed there 2 days, and many Samaritans became believers, according to John chapter 4, verses 1 through 42. These half-breeds, these mixed-up people religiously, became believers. Jesus says to his disciples at the beginning of Acts, before his ascension into heaven, you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and the utmost parts of the world. Samaria. He tells them, you're going to convert Samaritans. Already some have become believers. We see early in the book of John. Some had become believers already. So they were ready when the gospel came to them. By the way, some of that happened when the apostles were where? Jerusalem. So it wasn't the apostles spreading the gospel. They were still in Jerusalem. It was others. It may have been people just like you and me, regular Christians. I have many strong opinions. Here are 4 topics to choose a few. And they're strong opinions. Want me to pick one? Want to hear one? I believe it is wrong for the federal government to have any long-term debt. I believe that very strongly. It just disgusts me that we're pushing $20 trillion in debt. And I remember one time the president stood up in one of the State of the Union addresses and said, next year we are going to cut the deficit in half. That's not the debt, that's the deficit. In other words, let me put that in household terms. Instead of, on my household budget, instead of going $50,000 in debt like I did last year, I'm going to cut that in half, and this year I'm only going to go $25,000 more in debt. As a household, that would ruin us. As a business, that would ruin us. As a country, that will eventually ruin us. So let me share another strong opinion. I'm sure to offend somebody here. I can't help it if those who disagree with me are wrong. However, I need to be careful that my strong opinions on non-religious matters do not become a stumbling block for those with whom I share the gospel. At the same time, I need to not waver in sharing the truth of the gospel, even when it contradicts the beliefs of a person who is not a Christian. And sometimes we get confused on what we think is right religiously and what we think is right on some other topic. Okay. So here's another topic. Just a little taste. I'll try not to spend too long on this. This is a satellite view of the greater Los Angeles area. Long Beach is down here. And this area right here is the San Fernando Valley. And in 1968, my family moved to the San Fernando Valley. And we moved right there. In this little range of mountains called the Verdugo Hills. We were up in the mountains. And here's a different view of this. And the vertical heights have been exaggerated so that you can get sort of an idea. Again, Long Beach is over here. San Fernando Valley is here. Verdugo Mountains is this little range here. San Gabriel Mountains, ooh, much bigger, are here. Desert is way out here. Beach, of course, is over here. I liked living here. There were lots of things about that I liked. And this is a little video you can watch. This is a video of me, it's a more modern one. I took this July 2nd. And I haven't lived there since 1977. Whoops, that didn't work. Try again. Click. Here we go. I could walk, in this case I'm driving, I could walk, and you'll notice it's hilly, and you can get a perspective by looking at the flat areas where the houses are versus the walls and sidewalks and stuff. I could walk from here to the edge of the developed area into a wilderness area, which was about 2 blocks away, although a pretty hefty little hill that I'll go up. I liked that area because we were an hour from the beach, we were an hour from the desert, and we were an hour from the big mountains that had evergreen trees, you know, pines, Douglas firs, cedars, stuff like that, and snow in the wintertime. Yes, we drive to the snow. And so this is the route that I would take. And I could do this after school if I wanted to. If I wanted to just go out and take a walk, take a hike. And as you see, it gets kind of steep here. There are no easy trails. It's all moderate to severe, moderate to strenuous, as far as the hills are concerned here. But I liked living there because I could just go out and take a hike. And it was nice. Now, this area does not have the big trees, I don't mean redwoods, it doesn't even have the big pine trees. This area, well, you get a little bit of a view of it here. And the road, the paved road ends here, and a dirt road which was maintained as a fire road so they can get fire apparatus in the hills in the event of a wildfire. And you could hike the road, you still can today. It's open to the public to hike and to enjoy the wilderness area. And so the beginning of the road looks like this. This was burned about a year and a half ago, so this is fairly fresh vegetation. Chaparral is what they call this type of area. And the chaparral has a certain smell to it. And every time I smell that, it reminds me of the days when I lived here and hiked here. Great views of the city. The Burbank Airport Tower is right here, so I could watch the airplanes take on and off. Interstate 5 is right here, a ribbon that now goes all the way from the Mexican border to the Canadian border. At that time, it wasn't completed. All the sections of it weren't completed. But this section in front of our house was. And I could watch the cars go on. I get beautiful views of the valley. This is looking due south toward the Hollywood Hills, Santa Monica Mountains. This is looking sort of southwest. You see more of the Burbank Airport there in the foreground. And this is looking due west. So far in the San Fernando Valley, you can't even see the other mountains on the other edge. And this is not smog you're seeing here. There is a little bit of marine haze. That day, the temperature was only 75. 4 days later, they had a record high of 121 degrees there. Temperatures over 100 are not uncommon in the summertime in the San Fernando Valley. Or I could turn my attention the other direction and look this way and see birds and lizards and plants and lots of nature stuff and enjoy that too. My last hike on this in this area was my wife's first hike, and it happened to be her first hike in this area. And it happened to be the first time we discussed the topic of being married to one another. And so that's kind of a fond memory. I never proposed. It just became an understanding that, you know, we talked about it and it's what we wanted to do. And the more each of us shared about what we wanted, the more the other agreed that, yeah, this is what we want to do. And it'll be 41 years next month. So I think it's worked out pretty well. Yes. I am very thankful for her. But there is something about this that I hated. Because in 1968, and the years shortly after that, smog was a big problem in Los Angeles. And the east side of the San Fernando Valley, where we were, the wind blew that direction. And the smog would just pile up against those Verdugo Mountains that I'm hiking in. And I remember, particularly if I did a sort of an all-day hike on a Saturday. And you can't help but breathe hard because it's rugged terrain. And I would get home and take a deep breath, and it would hurt, literally hurt, to take a breath because of the smog. I've never had asthma or any type of breathing problem like that. It was the smog. Fortunately, I consider it fortunate. In 1975, they started putting catalytic converters on automobiles. The number one cause of emission pollution in the San Fernando Valley is vehicles. They started putting catalytic converters on cars in 1975, and my dad was thinking, oh man, we're going to have to replace all the gas tanks. Pretty soon all the cars are going to have to burn unleaded gas and blah, 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 blah. And now I look back and I think, we used to put lead in gasoline. And that got into our air. Since then, since 1975, in the Los Angeles area, the pollution has been cut in half, and we have doubled the amount of cars in the area. I think that says a lot for the efforts of catalytic converters and other things that they have done to reduce emissions in our area. But we've done the easy things, like catalytic converters and unleaded gas. And if we are to have further reductions in emissions, because we're getting more and more cars, we're going to have to do more expensive or more drastic things. Thus, the last four automobiles that I have purchased have been plug-in vehicles, either plug-in hybrids or plug-in all-electric battery-powered cars. This is the license plate frame on the front of my car. I'm doing my part for cleaner air. I strongly feel that we need to make a concerted effort to have good air quality. Now, you may be thinking, well, Mike, that's okay, that's a California thing. You guys have issues with smog. I get it. I get it why you're, you know, that you don't like taking in a deep breath and hurting. But, you know, That's a California thing. Well, I'm a little more bold than just that. There's the back license plate frame. See, I vote with my feet, with my wallet. I feel very strongly that OPEC, the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, acts in a way, in ways that are contrary to the interests of our country. I feel very strongly that big oil companies act in ways that are often more in their interest than in the interest of the consumer. And I know I have offended people with these opinions. Those license plate frames used to be on the car that my son now drives, and when that, well, we were driving it and then I gave it to him, and he now has it. When he moved to Indiana with it, the next time I saw him, he handed me those license plate frames. So, Dad, I don't want to talk about this to people. I understand. I know I have offended people with this. Number one, dollar-wise, number one industry in California is agriculture. Number two, oil. Oil, oil, oil. Chevron is California's largest private employer. And I know a lot of good people that work for oil companies. And I don't have a particularly strong feeling toward oil companies. I have offended people with this opinion. When I was staying in Oklahoma Friday night, I thought, do I need to take this license plate frame off? Will my car be vandalized overnight? Doesn't change how I feel. Maybe I should be less vocal about it. But my feelings about this, I hope you get it. My feelings about this, just because they're strong, just because I think I got it right, doesn't mean if I run across a person who's an oil guy that I shouldn't share the gospel with them. That shouldn't get in the way, hopefully. Tensions between cultures was not unique to Jesus' time. We have them today. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. dreamed of a country in which his people, in which people of his children's generation would judge a person by the content of his or her character rather than the color of his or her skin. I think he was right about that. And it's interesting the way he worded that. He said, I dream that my children will grow up in a nation that's like that. I think he had given up hope that it would happen in his lifetime. I don't think it's happened in his children's lifetime. I remember the Watts riots of 1965. At the time, we were attending church in Compton, which has a high population of, or at that time had a high population of black people. Tensions were high. It affected the church. And then, when we had the Los Angeles riots, which included Long Beach too, in 1992, after the Rodney King, the trial of the men who had been involved in, or accused of beating him, and the outcome of that, then there were riots. And I'm thinking, in 1992, didn't we learn anything in 1965? And the answer is, not very much. And you can say, well, that's Los Angeles. Oh, wait a minute. What happened in 2014? What state is that? Oh, this one. Yeah. We still, our culture still doesn't have it smoothed out. It may never. That doesn't mean as Christians we can't smooth it out, at least with individuals. Amen. Here is a list I've made up of ways in which we prejudge others. I could go on and on and on with this list, but I think I've sort of tried to categorize it. We prejudge others sometimes about things they cannot change. Something perhaps related to their genetics. Something perhaps related to their upbringing. Sometimes we prejudge people that way. Sometimes we prejudge people about things that they could change, but somehow, for some reason, they have not. And sometimes those things are not relevant to being a Christian. And sometimes they are relevant to being a Christian. What if the person... And the general question here is, who are our Samaritans? I cannot answer that for you. I will share with you a couple of situations that have challenged me recently that I thought I would never see this. But I did. But you, be honest with yourself. You know, we all say, well, I'm not prejudiced. You know, I don't. But really? I struggle with it in some aspects. And I suspect you're not much different than me. What if the person has a different skin color? What if the person speaks a different language? Well, I can't communicate with them. They speak a different language. They talk so fast. And I don't get a word of it. And then when they do speak English, the accent is so straight, I just can't get a word they say. I taught high school for 19 years, 25 years in that district. The district where I taught, fairly large district. We had 8 comprehensive high schools plus some other special schools, 8 comprehensive junior highs, plus some other special schools. And by special, that's on both ends of that spectrum, including a magnet school that was rated either number 1 or number 2 in the state on the standardized test scores. Number 1 or number 2 in the state of California. Our district had students whose home language was, many of them, whose home language was something other than English. And they counted how many different languages, and the last time I heard a number, maybe even more now, 59. Our students spoke, various students, different students, spoke 59 different languages other than English at home. I struggled to name 59 languages. Have you tried that? Try that. See if you can name 59 languages. I don't think I can. Much less be fluent. I struggle being fluent in English. And I really have Spanish has been a frustration beyond belief for me. And much less some of the others. I did not teach in any of those languages except English. And I taught students from all different kinds of places. I could probably spend 10 minutes naming the different countries from which my students came, of the ones that I was aware of. I taught in English, and I taught in ways that assisted them to learn visual ways and tactical ways that they could learn the material beyond just what I was saying in English. And they got it, for the most part. They got it. It can be done. I'm not saying it's easy. And we have some difficult concepts, particularly when you're talking religious items, religious topics. But it can be done. What if the person has a different level of income? Either much higher or much lower than you. What if the person has a different level of education? Again, either much higher or lower than yours. What if the person uses tobacco? Come over to my house, we'll have a Bible study. Do you mind if I smoke? One of the first home Bible studies that I remember was spurred on by me. I was in a youth, YMCA youth group, and the man who was the leader of that group saw something that he wanted to know more about. So he talked to my parents, and my parents said, let's have a home Bible study. And his whole family came to the home Bible study, mom and dad and two children. My mother would have a little discussion with the children first, you know, tell a children's Bible story kind of thing first. And then my mom and dad would then we were dismissed and we went off and played. And my mom and dad would have a Bible study with them. And they both smoked once a week. Did a tremendous job on our house, you know. By the time it gets cleared out, here they come again. And it wasn't easy. But when they got to the first miracle, oh, wow, really? They're thinking, but they stuck with it. And by the time they got to Acts, they said, we need to be baptized. And all four of them were. What if the person has tattoos and or piercings? What if the person doesn't read well? What if they don't like to sing? They'll never fit in. What if the person behaves in ways contrary to the way a Christian should behave? My son-in-law and daughter, Amy and Rachel, studied with a couple. And they said, we need to be baptized. And so they were. And then my son-in-law, Emery, says to him, by the way, you shouldn't be living together and not be married. And they said, well, okay, we'll get married. And Emery just about fell over. What? Somebody wants to do what God instructs them to do? And they were married. And they still are. And they still attend with us. And we're thankful to have them. But issues like that can be a real challenge to somebody from the world. I'm going to end this list here because it could go on and on. You be honest with yourself and you can find out what things that would be challenging for you. But be careful, you might run into something that you haven't even thought of. Because that can happen too. Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 19 through 23, for though I am free from all men, I have made myself a servant to all, that I might win the more. And to the Jews I became as a Jew, that I might win the Jews. To those who are under the law, as under the law, that I might win those who are under the law. To those who are without the law is without the law, not being without the law toward God, but under the law toward Christ, that I might win those who are without law. To the weak I became as weak, that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all men, that I might by all means save some. You're not going to save them all. We already know that, but you can save some. Now this I do for the gospel's sake, that I may be a partaker of it with you. Don't be worried just because they're different. They still need the gospel. I'm going to talk about a couple of challenges that have come our way. Adam is not his real name. I'm going to call him Adam. He showed up at our church. I was the first one to greet him. I was out in the parking lot. By looks of his appearance, he was not well off financially. I had anticipated that he would ask for money. He comes to me and says, I'd just like some of the word. And I said, well, your timing is perfect. We're just about to have a Bible study. Why don't you go on in and we'll start in a few minutes. And we did. And he was very strange. Very short attention span. Didn't read well. Needed help following along. But we've had other people who didn't read well and needed help following along. And so my wife sits beside him and helps him follow along in the songbook, helps him follow along in the reading of the Bible and those kinds of things. Needed a big print Bible, which we supplied him with to, you know, while he was there. Unfortunately, also while he is there, this man commits an act that is criminal. My wife was the only one to witness it. And she decides to do nothing at the time, talks to me the next day, and we discuss it. Should we have mercy? This man needs the gospel. But then I also thought about the verse when they're talking about expelling the man who is among them. Of course, this would be a member of the church who had his father's wife. When they were talking about that, Paul says to them, even the Gentiles know that this is wrong. And that's kind of a standard I use when I'm thinking about the topic of withdrawing fellowship. Even the Gentiles know that this is wrong. Well, we're not expelling him, he wasn't a member. But I think that standard applied, in my mind at least. I'll tell you my thinking, you can say that I may have been wrong. So the next day, we went to the police department and filed a police report. The police were very interested in this. They came out to our house and did further interviews with us. They were able to positively identify him. They found him. They arrested him. He was charged. He accepted a plea deal, and he's now serving a 3-year sentence. Now the question is, now what? Eventually 3 years will be over. Do I go visit him in jail and attempt to share the gospel with him? He will need much observation because his trust has been broken. Or do we file a restraining order prohibiting from him being near our building? We've done neither at this point. It's a difficult question. He's older than I am. He showed himself to be untrustworthy and certainly not in line with what we would want of Christian behavior. I'll speak to you of another man. His name is Robert, not Robert Sagoon, if those of you know him, a different Robert. Robert came to us, and when I first saw him again, I thought the dress is awfully weird, how he's dressed. Turns out he had ridden his bicycle to the church building and had in his backpack nicer clothes to change into after the sweaty bicycle ride that would be appropriate for attending church. So there's twice I've... And James says, don't judge somebody just by how they look. Well, oops. So he talks to us a little bit, and he had read our website, and he liked what he saw, and he wanted to come and see more about what we actually do. And we thought, well, this is pretty good. So my wife and I make an appointment to have dinner with him. We take him out to dinner later that week, have a nice long discussion with him. Turns out he wanted to be baptized, but he hadn't been able to find a church that would do it. The church where his mother had been, he'd sort of been raised, he went back to them and they said, we don't baptize people at all. We don't do it. Then he went to another church and they said, yeah, but you got to go through this, you know, these classes, and then you get baptized to be a member of the church, not for salvation. And that's not exactly how he'd read the Bible. So he didn't like that either. So I wrote down some scriptures about baptism for him to look at. And he said, I want to be baptized, but I'm not sure I want to be a member of a church. And I said, well, baptism is important, but also being a member of a local congregation is important. So I wrote down some scriptures related to that. And I said, you read these, and then we'll talk. And he said, okay. The reason we couldn't talk about it then is because we had spent a whole bunch of time talking about science. Turns out he's a flat earth guy. Yeah. Flat earth. Thinks NASA is a farce. We didn't land on the moon. Goes on and on and on like that. And he's a pretty smart guy and has some pretty interesting explanations of all of that. And we spent way too much time talking about science stuff. The good part is he thinks science has really let him down and has concluded that only the scriptures are worthwhile. Science has just got a bunch of falseness to it. And then by default, the scriptures become the truth. I should have seen this coming. My next conversation with him was, you know, I don't exactly believe what you believe in with science, but I think we can still study the scriptures and not argue over science things, and I think we'll be all right. Well, then he wants to talk about and I should have seen this coming. Because every person that I've been aware of that believes in Christ and believes in a lot of what we would call conspiracy theories also is a King James only person. At least that's been my experience. And I should have seen this coming. And then he wants to talk about translations. And I said, I'm willing to study with you in the King James Bible. I don't have any problem doing that. But he had a hang up because when he came, we weren't using the King James Bible in our assembly. And he eventually said, I'm gonna go look for a church where I can sit down and they use the King James Bible, I can open up my Bible and I can follow along. That was his reasoning. And so I thought, well, let me just let this lie. I never run into a flat earth person before who really believed it. I've run into some King James only people before, but he had sort of set the constraints that there wasn't much I could do as far as what our assembly does. So I thought I'm going to let this lie for a while and see how that plays out for him. So about 3 weeks ago, I decided I need to call him up. It's time. And I look at my email and he sent me an email. He says, please contact me. Okay. He had had a terrible accident on his bicycle. Injured very severely. And in the hospital bed, he got to rethinking things. And his heart was in the right place now. So my wife and I, we went over, brought him dinner in his apartment. And we talked, and we read scripture, and we prayed. And he said, as soon as I'm able to get out, because he hadn't even been out, I want to be baptized. Last Sunday. Now, how that will work out when we socialize and talk about other stuff, I'm not sure. But it worked. Was I challenged? Yeah. Yeah. Somebody didn't believe what I believe about something that most of it, God doesn't care whether you believe somebody landed on the moon or not. Really? You know, when I look at those 1969 terrible quality videos, it's easy to believe that was faked. You know? I could have faked that with my own home movie camera kind of thing. But anyway, be careful, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters. People need the Lord. They don't need your personal opinions about stuff that doesn't really matter. Even if you believe it strongly. I will close with something I learned from a man with a mental disability. This man is a member of our congregation. He is currently confined to an institution. It is a very sad situation. He hears voices. In his mind, these voices occur because somebody implanted some device in his head. At one point, he also believed that somebody had either this same device or another device that had been implanted in his head was able to read his thoughts, and that his thoughts were being broadcasted to the people around him. So, what he did is he prayed that his thoughts would not be offensive to the people around him. That should be all of our prayer. Pray that what I say is not offensive because of me. Now, it might be offensive because it's the truth of the gospel, and some people find that offensive. They get stuck on the resurrection, or they get stuck on the miracles, or there's lots of places where they can get stuck. But if they get stuck because I don't like oil companies, shame on me. If they get stuck because I struggle with Spanish, shame on me. So, I encourage each of you to have that type of a prayer. When you're dealing with other people, don't be offensive because of you. Let the goodness and the gospel of Jesus shine. And who knows what kind of person you'll be able to help lead to Christ. That's my encouragement for you tonight. Did you notice the songs that Dan chose? What was the running theme in that? Tell the gospel. Brothers and sisters, tell the gospel. And it may be somebody way different than you that you're telling it to. They need it too. And they might not get it from anybody but you. Please share it. Let's stand, let's sing.